Mr. Edwards, Reel 11. After the capture of Schwarmstead on the 10th...
While we're at Schwarmstead, we were issued with the insect powder because of this typhus, a camp where typhus was raging.
That's Belton, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. We didn't know it was Belton at the time. But we were told to sprinkle it inside our clothing and inside our blankets. So I had a sort of a wash down. I couldn't have a bath, but we had a canvas bucket and I filled it with some water and I had a wash down with this. Got them dressed and I had a wash down with this canvas from out of this canvas bucket. And as I got dressed, I sprinkled this insect powder inside my shirt and inside my pants and inside my uniform. As I redressed, and sprinkled some inside me, three blankets that I had.
Were you aware that it was on that night that there was an accident? Tommy Smith was killed, and Gilmore was wounded when a Comet accidentally fired its gun going into Largo. Did you know about that? Or?
Not at the time, no.
Okay.
That was the 10th, was it?
Well, according to the book, yeah. They're not necessarily. No. Well, what's the next thing you remember then?
Well, I can only remember being across the River Aller, and we were told there were Romanian Marines that we were up against.
Is this the Elbe or the Aller?
No, across the Aller. Across the Aller. Oh, well, the next thing I can remember was Moudon, which we missed. I made a note here.
What happened to Moudon then?
Well, on the 13th of April, the troop led through a village, and we just got to the far side of the village. We were coming out at the other side when one of the tanks got bazookaed. One killed, one wounded, and the rest of the crew had to bail out. They were half blinded because the dust and smoke had got in their eyes. So one of the tanks in the troops, there were some new houses on out to the left of us, so one of the tanks swung its gun round and put a shell through one of the houses. So the lieutenant told me to do the same, so I swung the gun round, put a shell through the front door. I mean, it's vandalism, but it's the tank got bazookaed, but as soon as the infantry came dashing up from behind us, the bazooka men all came out with their hands up. So I thought it was a bit annoying, this kill somebody and then come out and surrender immediately. So that's why I put a shell through the house, and I did the same through this front door. Anyway, having swung the gun round, all the tank went dead then. So Spike, the driver, worked his master switch, reset his master switch, and everything came on again, engine, wireless and everything, all except my power traverse. So my power traverse had gone, and I had to wind it back on the hand traverse, which was very hard work because the turret weighs 8 tons. It's very slow and very hard work winding it back by hand. Anyway, the rest of the day, fortunately we didn't do a lot of shooting, but I had to traverse a time or two the rest of the day, and it was very, very hard work, all this traversing. Anyway, in the evening of the 13th, the fitters came to work on the tank. It was a fault in the rotary junction box on the bottom of the turret. And they worked on it. The next morning, I had to traverse the gun, and the same happened again, everything went dead. So I was still an answer. But anyway, we were then made LOB, the troop was made LOB, which is left out of battle, which they did now and then at the time. You were put with the A echelon, so you travel with the A echelon, partly as a rest from action and partly as a escort for the A echelon. So we were put with the A echelon for 2 days, so we missed Muden. Muden happened on the 15th, evening the 15th. Anyway, the 16th, the next day, we rejoined the squadron near Muden. So we missed that bit. And whilst we were LOB, our second lieutenant was taken off us to be a troop leader in another squadron. And we got our Corporal Paddy Purcell back as commander.
Did you prefer that?
Yeah, I did, yeah. So, because I seemed to get on quite well. I had confidence in him. Like I say, he wasn't clever, but he was a good, solid, steady tank commander.
So what's the next thing you remember?
Well, there was an incident, supposed to be, I can remember an incident called a reconnaissance in force. The squadron and a company of infantry were informed there was supposed to be some Germans holed up in a plantation somewhere, and we went over to look at it, and they sent, we had a platoon of infantry, and they got off, and they had to advance towards this wood to see if there was anything there. And while they were advancing across this plough field, we were following, and we were lead tank, and all of a sudden I saw two infantrymen fall over backwards and all the others dropped flat. The tank stopped and I had an HE up the spout, and I put an HE into the edge of the wood and traversed a bit, another HE and another HE farther on, and the beezer, and the beezered all along. 10 belts of beezer I put in all along the bottom of the wood. And after the 10 belts of beezer, Paddy Purcell said, just put a belt in the top of those trees. So I put a belt in around the tops of the trees as well, just in case there was anybody up there. And then we were told to pick up the infantry and come back. So we picked up the infantry, apart from the two dead, and went back. And I thought, what a waste of time that was, because if they thought or knew there was enemy there, they could have pounded the wood before letting the infantry go anywhere near it. So that was a reconnaissance in force. But I thought the loader did well, because we fired all these 10 belts just one after the other, and there was no delay at all. So that was that little bit. And that night, I remember we parked in a village square and all slept on the floor of a bank.
And that was the 16th, right about then?
No, 16th or 17th it would be, maybe the 16th.
And then
the 18th, I can remember the 18th, I think it was the 18th, we were travelling cross country, we were travelling over this country south of the River Elbe, which it was like market garden country to me. Just up the road is Ashton Moss. Used to be a big market garden area. It's not there anymore. It's been built over and motorway over and all sorts. But it just reminded me of Ashton Moss. It's like market garden area. We were going on earth tracks. Our tank leading, we seemed to travel for a few miles. Very early morning, just after dawn. We moved into a village. Into the edge of a village, and then stopped for further orders. All quiet, nothing in sight. And then along the street in this village was a line of trees, and I could see movement coming towards us through this line of trees, and it was a German soldier on a bike with his rifle over his shoulder, pedalling along. And I thought, well, he'll have a shot when he gets up towards him. He'll have to surrender a bit sharpish. But anyway, the gunner said, "It's bloody Jerry, this. What are you waiting for?" Anyway, I wasn't going to do anything, but I just traversed the gun. But I just traversed the gun as the Jerry came in sight, and he saw the gun moving, and he panicked, and he tried to shoot off up a side turning, so I gave him a quick burst. And of course, he dropped dead off his bike. And through the gun sight, I got a close up view of his face as he fell off his bike. I seemed to go grey. I can still see his face.
Did that upset you?
Only slightly, because I mean, it was a shame. It didn't need to happen, but if he'd just kept coming towards us, it'd been alright. I thought he was trying to escape, I'd better get him. Slightly, but I thought what a shame. But I thought there's 3 million German dead, another one won't make a lot of difference.
What next?
Well, we advanced towards Vinson. That was a town that was captured that day, I think it was the 18th. And we didn't have to do much except when we got in there, we were near the bridge, and somebody got a lot of civilians and German prisoners on the bridge to stop it being blown. Hopefully to stop it being blown. Anyway, it wasn't blown. And in the evening and during the night, we had two tanks blocking the edge of this end of this bridge. And we slept in a drawing office, which was right on the edge of this corner of this bridge, and we took turns manning the tanks to block the end of the bridge. Next morning, we were in Vincent, and Spike sat on the pavement frying chips. He got hold of, he'd done a bit of looting and got hold of some fat, a bowl of fat, and he was cooking chips in this fat. So we had chips for lunch. And we moved to a place
called... Was there much looting, or were you aware of it, or foraging, or whatever you want to call it?
Spike was a looter. I don't think anybody else seemed to bother, but Spike was a looter. He used to go charging around, seeing what he could pick up.
What sort of things would he get?
I can't remember. Anything
of value?
Alarm clocks, and I can't remember. I can't remember. It never got much that mattered.
So what next then?
Well, the next morning we moved up to a place called Borstel, and we settled down at Borstel, and we were sleeping in a hayloft. We were there for a good while they got a bridge across the Elbe.
What next?
Well, the next I can remember is the 1st of May, we crossed the Elbe. The 15th Scottish Division had a bridgehead over the Elbe near Launeberg, and the 1st of May we crossed over and advanced north towards Lubeck.
Now that was very quick advance, it was along a motorway, wasn't it? Or some people went on.
Well,
what
we
do
were.
You remember of that?
Well, not a lot, except that during the afternoon, we came up where these trees had been cut down, so they'd fallen across the road. And there were six massive trees cut down, and they'd fallen across the road, blocking the road, which didn't stop us because the going was good. It must have been pretty dry then. We all deployed on the fields, and there was some opposition. There was a big house, like a big mansion, and there was infantry and SP guns near this big house. Now, so there was some shooting, and but our tank, for some daft reason, was told to see if we could get up the road. Well, these tree trunks were quite high off the road because of the branches were holding them up. We were told to see if we could get up the road. Amazingly, we did, because as we climbed up the branches, it must have pulled the trunks down. So they were massive trunks, like 2 foot thick or more. We climbed over these trees, all six of them, and we got to the other side. So it was possible to do it, but why the hell we bothered, I don't know. But it was most uncomfortable, because as you climbing up the tree was one thing, but when you dropped off the tree onto the tarmac, it was such a horrible thud. It was most uncomfortable. Anyway, that was it, and we made it to the other side, and after some shooting, the SP gun did a retreat, and we all advanced, and as we were passing this big house, it was on fire. I mean, it was always on fire. These houses were always on fire when there was any shooting. It was blazing away, and as we passed it, there was lots of civilians all streaming out of this house, young and old, And I thought, I felt sorry for them because they were streaming out of the burning house and having to dodge our tanks. They were streaming into the grounds and all our tanks were charging past them, and they were frightened. I could see they were frightened to death as we were passing them. And afterwards, Jeff Bennett, a motor man, was called Jeff Bennett. He was the driver of Sergeant G's tank, and he said when he was going through the grounds, there was a young woman holding a baby and hiding in the ditch right in front of him. He said, I only just missed her. He just pulled out on the stick. He said, I just missed her. He said, I was lucky I didn't. He said, he was a bit bothered by it. Anyway, that's all I can remember of that bit. And we spent the night in a farmyard. And a lot of Germans had given themselves up, and we had a barn there full of Germans. There must have been 100 and odd Germans in the barn. When they wanted to relieve themselves, we had to let them out around the corner, out of the door and around the corner. So we had the tanks in the farmyard, and we just settled down for the night there. We had to sleep in the tanks because we couldn't sleep in the barn because it was full of prisoners. The next morning, we left the prisoners to the infantry and set off again towards Lübeck, which must have been about 20 or 30 miles. Anyway, during the afternoon, our tank stopped. The driver, he pulled off the road. He said, "My oil pressure's gone." Well, what had happened? There's a pipe broken and all the oil was running away out of his engine. I think all that jumping out of the trees onto the tarmac had jolted it to bits. So we were stuck there, and they said, "Oh well, wait for the air echelon coming up behind and come up with them." And so we had to take the two beezers out of the tank, and take the firing pin out of the gun, and we loaded ourselves and got our ration box, and we loaded ourselves onto a truck that got space in it, and the fittest truck coming up welded the hatches shut. So we stayed on this truck then, and we travelled slowly towards Lübeck. The regiment, and they had the first Cheshire infantry on the back, they captured Lübeck without any opposition, and we were travelling slowly up behind them. And at one spot we saw a lot of RAF men, very happy looking RAF men who had just been released from the camp, and they were waving to us as we passed. And a bit farther on, we stopped near some buildings, and under a sort of loading bay there was a car, a small Citroën car. So Spike jumped out, went over to look at the car, got a can of petrol from the truck, went over, filled the car up, filled its petrol tank up, and he joined the column driving his own car up to Lübeck. So in Lübeck, we were just standing about with this truck.
What was happening at Lübeck?
Well, where we were, nothing. Just the supply column had just pulled in and parked, and that was it. What was happening, we didn't know. Anyway, during the evening, Spike said, "Hey, let's have a ride round in the car, you see." So I got in the car and we set off and had a ride round Lübeck. But it was 8 o'clock, and evidently we didn't know, but there'd been an 8 o'clock curfew, so it was deserted. Anyway, as we were driving along, we passed what looked like a door of a part of an hospital or a small dressing station of some sort. Anyway, we passed it and carried on. And after a while, we saw this German soldier staggering along, and he got all his, one of his legs all bandaged up with makeshift bandages, and he got a tree branch as a crutch, and he was just hobbling along. So we stopped him, we got him in the front seat of the car, and we took him to where we'd seen this dressing station, or hospital, or whatever it was. It was the only sort of sign of life in the town. So we dropped him off there, and watched him walk in. And as he walked in, a nurse came out. He must have said something as he walked in, and this nurse came out, and young, very nice looking nurse, very smart in her nurse's outfit, came over to us and asked Spike would he take her to her home to pick some things up and bring her back. And he said yes, all right. So she went back in the hospital or whatever it was, came out again and got in the car. And as we were starting to drive off, this German in uniform, I don't know what he was, like an army uniform, came dashing out, and he says like this. But anyway, we drive off. So I thought, I think he was a bit bothered for the nurse, I mean, being carried off by two enemy soldiers who had just arrived. Anyway, we took her to a home, drove her to a home, which was, it was dark by then, drove her to a home which was about a couple of miles or so on the outskirts of Lubeck. We stood guard at the garden gate while she went inside, and she came, a while later she came out with a suitcase. She must have been wanting to stay the night on the job. Got back in the car, drove her to this place and unloaded her, and that was that. So she got a ride out and home, and that was that. Next morning, I was picked up and told to join Sergeant Gorter's tank, and the squadron was spread out in a park, and I had to join Sergeant Gorter's tank because it's
Sergeant who?
Gorter.
G-O-A-T-E-R.
His wireless operator had been injured. He caught his foot in the traverse when the gun was traversed, and he nearly twisted his foot off, which was a shame because he'd been in action all the way from Normandy onwards, and that was a and survived, and there he was badly injured with a damn accident. Anyway, I had to be take his place, and I took his place during the day. We were just sitting there all day, as I remember. Then in the afternoon, Paddy Purcell turned up with our tank, so I was able to rejoin our tank. And during late afternoon, so we moved out of Lubeck about a few miles, like about 5 or 6 miles, to a farmhouse, and we settled down in this farmhouse, half a squadron of tanks and I think it was a platoon of infantry, settled down in this farmhouse. The officers and sergeants slept in somewhere in the farmhouse, and the rest of us slept in the airloft. We seem to sleep in a lot of airlofts in Germany.
Were you aware the war was almost over?
Well, we guessed it was. It was nearly over. And we just hung around at this farmhouse. We sort of deployed the tanks into the field during the day to keep an eye on things, and lingered in the farmhouse at night, in the farmyard at night time. And we did a bit of sorting out on the tank, and all the spare tins of food that we had on, which was scores and scores of spare tins that hadn't been used up, we dug a big hole and buried them all. Would have been good food for somebody, but we got sick of having them all this junk on board. And we were there for about a week or so, and then we moved to somewhere else in Germany for a while, and then
you got VE Day somewhere around then, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I was on guard VE Day night.
There was a member of VE Day. How did you feel? And
anticlimax. Sort of been involved in the war all this time. It was a bit of an anticlimax when it stopped. That was my impression.
And no celebrations for you?
Well, a room ration was issued, but I didn't get it because I was on guard. Yeah. And the room rations for the guard were all put in a tea mug, which was on a plank of wood somewhere in the barn. And the next morning, when somebody came and they thought it was the dregs of the tea, so they just threw them out. And so I didn't get my rum ration, and the guard didn't get their rum ration. So I missed that celebration. The only celebration I saw was both of his guns firing in the air, firing tracer in the air. Well, I presumed it was celebration anyway.
And then, if we could run through what happened after that.
Well, we moved up to Bredsted, near the Danish border, and sometime later, I think about the middle of May it was, I can't remember the date, around about the middle of May, we moved up to Bredsted, and our squadron had a street. The people had been forcibly moved out of the houses, and we moved in, and so they were nearly fully furnished.
What were the billets like?
Well, they were okay. I mean, there weren't enough beds for everybody, so one or two had a bed, and the rest of us slept on the floors. But the houses, were big houses, quite smart houses with big gardens, but they were a bit primitive. They didn't have sewers, and in our house the water supply was a big pump standing out of the kitchen floor. There was a bathroom upstairs, but it had no taps or anything. All the water had to be carried upstairs from this pump downstairs. And the pump didn't even work very well, but Spike and I, mechanically minded, we pulled it apart, and it had leather valves in, so we renewed the leather valves with some leather we got from somewhere, and it worked 100% after that.
And what kind of duties were you on?
Well, our squadron was immediately made responsible for a DP camp, a Russian DP camp, which was some distance away.
What were you doing for them all?
Well, the trooper tanks had to go to this tank, this camp. It was in a part of a village, actually, and a few houses in a village, and they were occupying all this village. We slept in an airloft as usual, and we had to have two men on the road all the time, so that any passers-by could pass by unmolested. For instance, if some people came up, wanted to walk up the road, then one of us would walk up the road with them. While I was there, I noticed this German man and wife, and his horse and trap drove through, and he looked so arrogant with his big whip driving through. I thought, he doesn't need an escort. We were there for 2 weeks, and then we came back to camp and went to the bedstead. And while we were in bedstead, we had to have guard did guards on the tank park, which was near the railway sidings. We had on the Saturday morning, we were told to have a drill parade to smarten us up, and we had a drill parade. But anyway, after two Saturday morning drill parades, there was a Sunday morning church parade, and the RSM congratulated our Major Voller, who was a squadron leader at the time, and I'm in the smartest squadron, so he cancelled the drill parade, so we were all right.
How did you get on with the Germans?
Didn't have any contact with them, not then. We were told to mustn't move anywhere out of the area except in pairs, and you must have your guns with you, and you mustn't fraternise. So we didn't have any contact with them, not at Bedstead. At least I didn't.
What happened next then?
Well, we hadn't been there better many weeks when we were told all the young men of the mobilisation group above a certain number, I've forgotten what it was, above about 30 or so, had to parade in the cinema. There was a cinema at the end of the street on the Sunday morning to be addressed by the colonel. So we were all there, all the younger end of us, and the colonel got on the stage and gave us a talk to say that we were all experienced soldiers and we'd all been in action at various times over the whole last 12 months. But that soon the regiment would be disbanded. But if any of us wanted to stay with the regiment and stay with the friends, we could transfer to the 1st 5 and 4, which was also in Germany, but which was due to go to the Far East. So after this talk, a gang of us in our squadron gathered together, and we had a talk, and we said, well, the 1st 5 and 4, we've got crocodiles, we knew that. And we said, well, we'd like to, we hated the thought of the Japanese. I mean, their name was mud as far as we were concerned. We said, well, let's go out and incinerate the yellow bastards. So we all volunteered to go to the 1st 5 and 4. So a day or two later, there's a convoy went with about 100 of us from the regiment, all going to the 1st 5 and 4. And while we were on the way there, a similar number were coming from the 1st 5 and 4 for older men coming back to our regiment.